Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, it's time for 5 o'clock Fast Track. We always start this with a ceremonial coin toss. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. Lindsay's here. Funchess is here. Okay, Brian, based on Ramona, last hour, heads, the NBA bubble, whether it be in Las Vegas or Orlando, the NBA bubble happens. Tails, no bubble. Call it in the air.
Heads, Disney World is a bubble. That counts.
We're going to Disney World.
We're going to Disney World. All right, Brian, you want to go first or you want to defer?
I will defer, no advantage gained.
Okay. When it comes to college football recruiting, the months of April and May normally kick off what many consider the busiest evaluation period on the recruiting calendar. It stretches all the way through June. This three-month term is chock full of significant events, many of them integral to the relationship building portion of the recruiting process. It is a critical time in which coaches seriously begin scouting rising juniors while making final decisions on rising seniors. Players for the first time tour campuses and work out in front of recruiters, and schools distribute thousands of scholarship offers. But now, nobody can visit anybody. The coaches can't visit the recruits. The recruits can't visit the schools. So here's my question. Brian, who do you think this hurts more, the schools or the recruits?
I think it hurts recruits, but not the top ones. Everybody knows who the five-star guys are in the fourth. But like, if you're one of those guys that needs a chance to get in front of a coach, get in front of an assistant to see him, whoever it might be, that, and show that you're a little bit different, a little bit better, whatever it might be, than what you have on tape, you're really in trouble. Like, you're not going to be able to earn yourself a better scholarship or a better opportunity than you otherwise might have. So, I mean, I think that for that kid, those guys are really in a tough spot. But for some of the smaller schools or the lesser, they're going to end up with players that are way better than anybody ever thought, because these evaluation processes are not perfect. You know, the scouting and all that kind of stuff, it's not a science. There are still some holes there, and there are going to be some weird schools that get some unheralded players that turn out to be awesome.
All right, well, let me come back at you a little bit, because the number of scholarships doesn't change. Like, even if these guys could all still go out and, you know, show up for pro days and do workouts, or even if the schools could still come into their homes and, you know, you got a guy, you got a guy like Herm Edwards who could come into your living room and blow your socks off. The same exact amount of scholarships are going to be given out. So my thought would be the opposite. My thought would be, okay, if I've got a great closer, all right, if I've got Herm Edwards on my staff and like he's my head coach, or I've got Nick Saban, and if Nick Saban can get into a room, a lot of people think that, you know, he can close the deal. If Nick never gets in the room, or Herm Edwards never gets in the room, can they sell what they're doing over Zoom? Can you woo somebody electronically, I guess would be my question.
Well, I mean, the flip side of that is, like, I would say you lose that advantage, but Alabama sort of sells itself. So, like, you know, when in doubt, that five-star recruit's going to be like, well, I have imperfect information. I'm just going to go to Alabama because I know the SEC is going to put me in the NFL. I mean, what was it, like 60-something players were drafted from the SEC this year? And so, maybe Herm loses out. Although I bet Herm is still very good on Zoom. But then think about if Herm at least can get on Zoom, the guy from, Appalachian State or whatever is in an even bigger problem because he can't sell the school and probably isn't a guy who's known as a closer. So it all just trickles down. And the schools that have natural advantages kind of keep those advantages over the ones that don't.
Lindsay, who do you think it affects more, the kids or the schools?
I don't know. I guess I would say that it probably affects the kids a little bit more.
That's right.
I don't know.
It's hard to say because you don't know what kids
it's bad
creative.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like a lose-lose situation, I guess.
Yeah. Funch, how about you? Do you think the schools are worse off or the kids?
The schools. they're not going to be able to get top graded talent.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to look at these kids in person
and make that money too.
Yeah, that's true. The schools are losing. Well, yeah, I didn't bring the finances into it. The schools are just, you know, Brian, there may be, you mentioned small schools that are going to get some good kids. Some of those small schools may have to give up sports, give up football, because if we don't have a football season, the football program pays for all the other sports. We'll have to wait and see. Funch.
Fast Track.
All right. So I am a big watcher of Top Chef. It's one of the shows that I've been managing to keep up with in the new season. And, obviously I cannot learn to cook like these people cook, but I'm wondering, since everybody's making their sourdough starters and cooking so much at home and we all have time to learn something, if you had to learn to make one dish that would be good enough to go on that show and compete, how long do you think it would take to perfect? And what do you think that dish would be? Not a whole meal, not a bunch of stuff, but like one thing that you think you could get to Top Chef level. How long and what would it be?
All right. So full admission, I've never seen an entire episode of Top Chef. I've flipped over. I've seen it before. So do I need an elaborate dish? Like, I love pork chops.
It needs to be five-star caliber type thing where, like, if you went to, you know, a great restaurant, okay, and ordered that meal, and somebody would be like, okay, I'm happy paying for that.
And I can, once I learn this, I have this skill for the rest of my life, and I can make it for me and my family and my friends, and I get one?
Yes, this is you. This is the meal that you can make, and like, this is your competition meal. But it's got to be like five-star quality.
Okay. Lobster ravioli.
Nice.
I think I've had good lobster ravioli, and I've had bad lobster ravioli. If you can make it well, if you can make it good, I think you're on to something. If it's bad, if you're in a cheap dive restaurant and they give it to you bad, it can be awful. That's where I'm going. Lindsay, how about you?
That's a tough one. I would have to say I would want to bake something, I think, because I know that, like, that's kind of unpopular for the most part, but every once in a while, I used to love Top Chef. They'll have like either a challenge that's specifically a baking dessert dish. So I would have to go with a dessert because I like to bake. And I'm thinking like banana pudding, like the fancy kind.
Good answer.
Like the creme brulee banana pudding type, you know, like the kind that you get at like a high end, like fancy.
Yeah, that is an excellent answer. All right, Funch, you get to make one magical dish. What are you going with?
I think I might go with a beef Wellington, like Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Wow, that's ambitious too.
But like, how long do you get? Like, what's the other half of that is how long do you think it'd take? Like, John, have you ever made lobster ravioli before? How much time do you think you need to become a one percenter in the making of lobster ravioli?
I have absolutely no idea. No, I do not know how to make it. I've just tasted it. I can make very few things. I can barbecue. That's about all I can do. Like Lindsay's talking about, like what she's talking about making or what Funch is talking about making, no way. My culinary skills are limited to the barbecue. By the way, Brian, what would yours be?
Yeah,
it
would be probably a pasta. And we do this sort of, every once in a while, we'll do like this really slow braised short rib thing. It's something my wife likes to make for me for my birthday.
Because
it's horrible for you. It's like this sort of rolled pasta with the short braised short ribs and all that. I would probably work on that until I could just nail it. And that might be my thing. Make like a sauce that goes with it a little bit. Like, that would be the thing that I would perfect. It would still probably take me months to get it right.
By the way, this is tangential to your question, but how safe are restaurants in this pandemic? Like in Manhattan Beach where I live, there are many, many restaurants that are not part of a chain. Like they're privately owned with, you know, one or two people. They've obviously been completely shut down. Even if they come back, they're going to have to come back and ramp up, right? They're going to have like 25% occupancy, then 50, then 75. And they're going to have to bring staff back, like cooks and waiters. Mm-hmm. And are most of these restaurants that I love going to going to be there when this is over?
God, I hope so. I mean, many won't, unfortunately. But, I mean, that's like, you know, it's actually kind of related to a question I got later for Fast Track. But, like, where you want to spend your money, because everyone, there's nobody working anywhere. I don't care how rich you are, what kind of job you have, where at some point you're not going to be impacted by what's happening economically. And so everybody's being kind of careful with their money. Even if you've got a job right now, and we're all very fortunate that we're working, you know, I mean, it's not ironclad given what's going on in sports. There are a lot of people who are already out of work. So where do you spend your money? And like, I want to try to eat out or support little businesses and stuff like that because I want them to be around, but it's a tough one. Like, everybody needs something right now. There are charities. And so it's a tough question. I hope they're still there. I really hope.
Me too. Funch?
Fast track.
Okay. As the coronavirus continues to be the biggest story in the world, we are hearing over and over again from people who are saying, quote, "This is as sick as I've ever been," end quote. Lucky for the four of us, we've had no symptoms and we've been lucky so far. But it got me to thinking, is there an obvious answer to that question for you? What is the sickest you've ever been? Have you ever been so sick that you can't get out of bed? What pops into your head when I ask you that?
Huh. Well, this is, again, kind of related to a question I've got coming up later. I will now push it later in the hour. Do you count having to get unexpected emergency heart surgery as sick if you walk into the office and the hospital feeling fine? Does that count as being
no.
sick?
No. I think sick would have to be like an illness that, although that is very serious. Did that happen to you since I've known you?
Oh, yeah. That happened a couple Junes ago.
I remember that now. That's right. Yeah, it was an unexpected scare out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
Well, yeah, then that absolutely counts for you. Funch,
all right, I'll take it.
Well, Funch, what's the sickest you've ever been? He might have walked away. Lindsay, what is it for you?
Well, if you don't count having kidney stones, which isn't really like a sickness, it's more.
You know, I've never had one, but I've been told they are the most painful thing in the world.
Funchy had that problem. I remember when Funchy had the kidney stones.
Oh, yeah, the kidney stones. Yeah, that was probably
the best. By the way, Funchy,
does that count?
Is that your answer? Is that the sickest you've ever been?
Yes, I was very, very, and also like I had some weird reaction to some medicine that they gave me too. To doctors, I broke out in hives all over my body. Ugh. Yeah.
All right. So Lindsay, let's assume kidney stones don't count for you. Is there another one that pops into your head?
Funchy took Lindsay's kidney stones.
There you go.
You stole them.
Well, I just had kidney stones a couple months ago. I was like my second or third week working there.
Did you miss a day or you almost missed a day? I'm trying to remember.
I missed a day. Not counting the kidney stones, I would say actually in August of this past year, I got really, really sick after I came home from my family vacation and I was coughing nonstop for literally like a month. And I kept going to the doctor and they kept saying like, well, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what it is. Anyway, long story short, I guess I ended up having pneumonia and it took almost 2 months for me to like completely be rid of it. And I would get migraines every day. I would cough so badly I couldn't sleep at night. No matter what medicine I took, no matter what they gave me, I just couldn't get rid of it. And it was the most like miserable sickness that I can ever remember having.
You know, for me, I was working in Beaumont, Texas as a sportscaster. And I was the weekday guy. I was the Monday through Friday guy. And the weekend guy had just left for another job. And our new weekend guy was coming in the next day. But for that night, I was the only guy in town. And high school football in Southeast Texas is indescribably huge. It's just absolutely gigantic. We would do a high school football highlight show on Friday night that would do like a 60 share. Which is absolutely insane. It's the only thing people care about down there. So one Friday, I get a really bad case of the flu. And I cannot, I'm like dizzy. I can hardly, and it hit me when I was at work. And my boss looks at me and he goes, do you think you can do like 3 minutes of sports at 6 o'clock? And I said, I think so. He goes, what about the show later tonight? And I go, let me see how it goes. So I go out and I do the 3 minutes. He drives me home. I go to sleep. He goes, I'm going to come leave your door unlocked. I'm going to come back and wake you up at 9:45. He comes back, wakes me up at 9:45. I throw a bunch of makeup on. I go back to the station. I do sports at like 10:20. I do a half hour show at 11. He drives me back home and I wake up the next day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was like this 24-hour bug that I have no idea what I got, how it hit me, how I got through it. I have very little memory of what I said on those shows. I probably shouldn't have done them. I'm sure my boss probably got sick, but I made it through. I just feel so bad for these people. that especially these nurses and doctors in these hospitals who can't make these people feel any better. That's the mm-hmm. overwhelming sentiment you hear from coronavirus patients. Is like we had Lindsay, when was it that we had Myron Roll on the show? Was it 2-3 weeks ago?
I think it was about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, the football player who's now a doctor, and he was helping out on the front lines at Mass General in Boston. And we asked him, we said, what's it like and what are you hearing? And he said, you just hear over and over, this is as sick as I've ever been. And you do anything you can to help him. But here's the sending up a prayer and fingers crossed that those words do not come out of your mouth, because a lot of people have been saying that over the past couple of months. All right, we'll take a break. When we get back, Lindsay's got a question. Funch has got a question. And we roll on with 5 o'clock Fast Track. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, rolling on with 5 o'clock Fast Track. And Funch, it's to you.
Fast Track.
All right, so more gasoline was added to the fire of the beef between Charles Barkley and Draymond Green. Remember earlier in the NBA season while the Warriors were having their struggles, Barkley said this about Draymond.
He had his normal triple single.
Golden State.
Why you on him so hard? You know, he talk all that stuff when he got them other boys with him.
Now, in the newest All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Stephen Jackson, Draymond Green said this about why Barkley always goes at him.
I got a lot of respect for Charles Barkley, the basketball player, man. As a fan of basketball growing up, Charles Barkley was a great basketball player. He never won shit. And, like, you know, Charles Barkley has kind of had this beef with me since I started coming up. You know what I'm saying? Since I started coming up in this league, it's always him throwing a shot. And for years, mm-hmm. I didn't respond. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, whatever, you know, Charles Barkley's a great player. Like, I'm not going to respond, whatever. And it's just keep throwing a shot. Honestly, it's jealousy. You know what I'm saying? It's jealousy that somebody the same size as him or smaller, could come in the league and have the success I had, make the money I've made, win the championships I've won. These are all things that Charles Barkley wasn't able to do.
Now, does Draymond have a point? And once and for all, who's the better player, Barkley or Draymond?
Well, the better player thing is not close. Barkley was a much better player than Draymond. I'm not so sure, though, Brian, that this is a feud, even though Draymond has the championships and the money, that he can win. Because what we were given last year was a peek of what life would be like if Draymond was your best player. And the Warriors right. had the worst record in the league.
Right. So Draymond's been banged up too. But, like, yeah, I mean, as a guy who can carry a team, I think you could argue that Draymond's skill set is a little wider. He's certainly a better defender than Barkley was. But, I mean, Charles at his peak was a better overall, certainly more impactful scorer, stuff like that. Well-roundedness, maybe it's Draymond, but you're right. Like, Draymond can't carry a team in that way.
Funch, who do you think's winning that feud?
I mean, Draymond's got the championships and the money, but Barkley's got, you know, the Hall of Fame career. I mean, Draymond could have been a 10th man on the Warriors and still have the championships and the money.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Lindsay, what do you think?
I'm looking at the analytics. I'm wondering if there's a way to justify this.
All right, I'm pretty sure Lindsay's put the mute on her microphone, which she does from time to time.
Sorry, I always do that. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I would have to look. We should look at, like, the, what's it called, the trade analyzer, because that would give you a good idea of, like, where it pans out, you know?
Well, Barkley, if they were both in their prime, a straight-up trade of Draymond Green for Charles Barkley, whoever gets Barkley wins that trade. Barkley was, as Brian pointed out, a Hall of Fame player. But it is weird that he continues to – I mean, there's a lot of other players in the league worse than Draymond that he could pick on. He had a funny line. What did he say, Brian, that he's like the guy in the boy band once Timberlake leaves? He's got nothing left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, I think there's probably a little bit of resentment. Like, you know, when somebody like Charles gets slammed for not ever winning a title, can't win a title, and Draymond gets sort of this praise as being the glue of this Warriors dynasty, and they can't win anything without him, and maybe feeling that, that, you know, being at the right place at the right time for Draymond is elevated into a place that he could never get by himself, while Barkley just gets crushed by all the people who are, you know, kind of in the count the rings crowd. So I get where Charles is coming from, but it's a little petty.
I think that Draymond is the guy that everyone loves to hate. He's probably one of the biggest villains in the NBA. Like, most people, I would say, hate him. And even people on, like, Warriors, even people, like, Warriors fans, I think, don't like him. So I think that Charles is, like, the lovable guy that everyone tunes in to watch, and he's always saying something funny and goofy, and he's just kind of, like, representing the people and, you know, taking that side of it and jabbing at Draymond because nobody likes the guy. And it would probably have calmed down, and you wouldn't have heard whole lot more about it. But Draymond, as much as like Barkley keeps going back at it, so does Draymond. It's like neither one of them know when to stop. They always have to have the last word. So that's why it keeps going on and on and on, because they both have those personalities where they have to have the last insult. They have to have the last word and get that
right.
Last
yeah,
burn
that's
in.
A fair point. There is there's an old saying in the publishing business, never pick a fight with a guy who buys ink by the barrel. In this case, mm-hmm. Charles is the guy with the ink by the barrel. I mean, he's got a microphone. He's on TV every night. Draymond just plays for one team, and he's arguably the fourth best player on that team. So I don't, like, you know, again, I don't know if this is a fight that Draymond can win. Funch, Lindsay,
track.
It's to you.
So I sent you guys this video a couple minutes ago. And for anyone that might have seen this video of Mike Tyson sparring with pads, it's been making the rounds on social media today, and he just looks pretty terrifying in it. He's just going all out, and you could argue that he looks like, you know, a semblance of the old Mike Tyson in his prime. You could still see that he's, like, got it in him. So he recently joined the Big Fendi
wow,
podcast.
Wow, you're right. He's just,
yeah.
Whoa.
He looks great.
He looks like a badass, yeah.
Yeah.
So Tyson recently joined the Big Fendi podcast, and he was asked about a potential return to the boxing ring.
One of these boxing promoters gave you a call tomorrow and said, we want to set up a fight for you in 2021. Would you take that fight for $10 million?
Well, not for $10 million, but I'll box them an exhibition for a charity or something, you know, and I'll receive some money, but I'll give a great share of it to charity and stuff.
So you're telling me right now Mike Tyson still can get in the ring and go 12 rounds?
I'll train for 12, but I only want to go 3.
So I've got two questions for you guys. The first one, after seeing that video, would you guys spar with Mike Tyson for like $100,000? And then the second one is, after hearing that he's training for a potential exhibition fight, who would you want to see him get in the ring with? John?
All right. Answer to your first question, maybe $100 million. $100,000. Number one, Brian, look at that video.
Yeah.
Multiple broken ribs. I'm dropping at the first contact.
Right.
You need to add several zeros, Lindsay, to your offer to get me to step into the ring with Mike Tyson. And as to your second question, who would I like to see him fight? There isn't like a modern day Mike Tyson. There's few things sadder than life than an old washed up boxer being asked to go back into the ring.
Right. So that's why you'd have to think, instead of having him fight like, you know, Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder, wouldn't it be more appropriate for them to try and get someone like,
oh, I've got it.
You know, like George Foreman or somebody to
no,
come
I've
out
got
of retirement
it.
And retire?
Okay. I've got it. Ready?
Yeah.
Steve Mason. Mike Tyson against Steve Mason in 3 rounds. All right, so true story. One year, there's this reverend. And this is back when Mason was kind of in the mode of wacky AMDJ, and he would do anything. And so this reverend calls, and Mason says one day, just kind of riffing, says, you know, I've never been a boxer, but I always thought I'd be pretty good at boxing. I think, if I trained, I'd be pretty good at it. And this reverend calls and goes, you could not be me in boxing, and I'm 66 years old. And Mason at the time is like 30. And he goes, oh, I'd beat your ass, old man. You know, he's yelling, blah, blah, blah. One thing leads to another. And we end up with a 3-round boxing exhibition with Mason against this guy at a gas station. We set up a ring at a gas station. And so Mason's in one corner and the Reverend's in the other corner. And I am the combination ring announcer referee. There was no Mason in Ireland yet. I was a TV guy in San Diego. And they said, let's get Ireland to do it. He'll do it. So I come out and I go, all right, gentlemen, box. And this Reverend comes out of the corner. And I swear, you guys, I think he was on some type of HGH. I have no idea what happens. He comes out and just starts wailing on Mason, like not even giving Mason a chance, like no playfulness in him at all. And Mason's trying to like cover up and defend and trying to get a fight thing. And the guy he just came at him like a crazed dog. And I had no choice but to end it like 20 seconds into the fight. And I look at Mason, I go, I'm sorry. He goes, are you kidding? What took you so long? You should have ended it 10 seconds earlier than that. So just agreeing to box against somebody is not what you think. Like, you put some old guy in there, Lindsay. Tyson, you put George Foreman in there, Tyson might kill him. You know, that's the, especially as good as he looks in that video you sent.
I mean, this is one of those deals, like, you know, before you were asking me would I take the, you know, risk taking the pill that would kill me. This is one of those things that I would do for 100K, because like you said, I get to wear pads like that guy is, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, padded up like that.
So they were padded up.
Yeah, that would lower my price.
Right,
that
because
was the
like,
thing, like on social media, the question was some guy like tweeted out the video and said like, "Would you spar with him without pads for 10 grand?" And everyone's like, "No, you need to give me like 10 million." So he's like, "All right, with pads, what's your price?" And it seemed like the consensus was there were people out there crazy enough to say yes for 100 grand. So that's why I posed it to you guys.
Yeah, man, I don't know.
Yeah, but you said it, John. It's 100 grand to take one punch because that's all I can stand up for. Really, what it is, it's a waste of Mike Tyson's money to pay me to spar him because he only gets one punch. It's not much of a workout.
Fudge, so, what's your price to go one round with Mike Tyson?
Oh, man, I think half a mil yeah. With no pads.
Wait, no pads. My price might be 100. No pads.
It goes up considerably.
No pads, Brian. Would you speak well of me at my funeral?
I will speak well of you regardless.
All right.
You know what's funny is you were saying that like you don't want to mess with an old guy trying to get in the ring and box. And my last job, like, they did this thing every year where they would have a bunch of listeners like get in the ring and box each other. And they would, you know, have people send in their videos like, oh yeah, I'm a badass. And they're doing these like hype videos and themselves like training. And they're just like, they're so bad. Like, they have no business being in a boxing ring. They have awful form. They don't know what the hell they're doing. Half of them are probably drunk. So they put all these like, you know, overweight, underweight, old, young, whatever guys, and put them together in a bunch of different boxing matches. And like, we had to go to Texas for it. And it was some of the funniest crap I've seen in my life watching these guys like legitimately try and have a boxing match with each other. It was just, I mean, it was slightly hilarious, but it was also kind of sad because these guys had no clue what they were doing. And it was just, it was funny. It was a good laugh.
All right, more Fast Track coming up next. Mason in Ireland, ESPN 710. All right, we're rolling on with 5 o'clock Fast Track. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mason. Brian, it's to you.
Fast Track.
All right. We had Chargers first rounder Kenneth Murray on at 3:30 earlier today. Catch that on the podcast, of course. And in honor of that, I would like to play a game of Name That Murray. I will put out a clue and you all three want to play with your name as
absolutely.
Your buzzer. Okay. So your name is your buzzer. And when you know the name of the Murray of which I am speaking, you buzz in and you say it and you get a point if you're correct. Are we ready?
Okay.
So if I were to say
I know enough, I don't know if I know very many Murrays. Let's try.
We'll find out. He is the star of such excellent movies as Groundhog Day, Stripes,
Funchy. Bill Murray.
That's a point for Funchess.
Can't believe Very I good. Missed that.
Yeah. He is a former American football running back, played in the NFL for 7 seasons. Yes.
DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco Murray. Didn't even get to the part about who he played for, Offensive Player of the Year in 2014, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's how John rolls.
Yep. This MLB Hall of Famer never won an MVP, but he was Lindsay.
Eddie Murray.
Not to be confused with Eddie Money.
Wow, 1-1-1. This is a spirited contest.
Five more left. This recently retired British tennis player won 3 majors and 2 Olympic gold medals. John.
Andy Murray.
Andy Murray, 2 for John. She
I definitely
is the
wasn't getting that one.
Well, John just played tennis today. It is he has an
there
advantage.
You go. Lisa.
She is the senior senator from Washington State. Lindsay.
Ann Murray?
That is incorrect. It is not Ann Murray.
Yes.
That is my only clue. She is the senior senator from Washington State.
Wow. I don't know who this is, so let's John. Let's give
John.
It a shot. Debbie Murray.
It is it is
great
not
name.
Debbie take, Murray.
Take a shot. Take
Funky.
A shot, Punch.
Take a shot.
Sarah Murray.
It is not Sarah Murray. Her name is the Honorable Patty Murray, senior senator from Washington
enough.
State.
Close enough.
This former Raiders and Vikings running back is now the other
John.
Half of the running back. John.
Latavius Murray.
Latavius Murray, the other half of the running back duo in New Orleans, although a much lesser role behind Alvin Kamara than Mark Ingram had. John, 3-1-1, taking a bit of a dominant lead here. This 23-year-old guard was the 7th pick of the 2016 NBA draft from the
Lindsay.
Denver Nuggets. Lindsay.
Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray is correct. Lindsay, coming back.
3-2-1.
I know it.
3-2-1. Everybody's still in. Known as the Racers, this school has produced
John.
Such... John.
Murray State.
Murray State. Name that Murray extends to colleges as well. All right, this last one is worth 3.5. So
okay.
So you can have a chance.
Man.
Okay, all the marbles.
Yeah, that's right. He is the former teen heartthrob who starred on the drama One Tree Hill.
John.
Oh, Funchy, who do you think got there first?
It sounded like John first.
I think John as well.
Yeah. Chad Michael Murray. Oh,
Chad Michael Murray. John gets 3.5 points.
All
wins
I call
the game.
Baloney, and so
7.5-2-1.
Did you
nice
know it,
job,
Lindsay?
John.
Did you
yes,
know Chad Michael Murray?
Of course
Murray?
I knew it. Yes.
Were you part of the nation of heartthrobs that was in love with Chad Michael Murray?
No, that was a little past my heartthrob prime.
Okay, so here's a story, Brian, that goes with that show. So that had a bunch of young, attractive actors on it. And one day, because when you speak of young and attractive, you know this would eventually turn to Rick Fox. Rick Fox appeared on that show. And he came in. And two of the – Chad Michael Murray had married Sophia Bush, who was one of the co-stars on that mm-hmm. show. And I said, what do you guys – I said Rick came in with the showrunner, the guy in charge of the show. And I go, wait a minute, they got married in real life? And he goes, yeah. I go, are they married on the show? He goes, no. I go, what are you going to do if they like – if the real-life marriage doesn't go well? He goes, well, I'm just going to hope that doesn't happen. Literally 2 weeks later, they announced they were splitting up. I have no idea
wow.
how he resolved it. But that show was on for, you know, that show was about two bath. The reason Rick Fox is on there, the brothers who lived in One Tree Hill, which was a mythical town in North Carolina, were basketball players, right? I never watched that show. I don't know. But I think that's what Rick said, and that's why he was on the show.
You seem to know an awful lot about a show that you've never seen before.
I just know because of Rick Fox. Rick's been on the show a lot, and he said, so that's what I knew. And he came in. The guy did, they did like an hour with us, Rick and this guy. All right, Funch.
Fast track.
Okay, according to NBC News, booze sales are up by 40% in the United States in the month of April, which concluded yesterday. I'll give you guys the 4 best sellers. I want each of you to try and put these in order from the bestseller first. Now, here you go. Write these down. I'm going to give you 4 names of liquors alphabetically, and then you've got to put them in the right order. All right? Bourbon, gin, Irish whiskey, and tequila. Okay? Bourbon, gin, Irish whiskey, and tequila. That's the 4 in alphabetical order. Ooh. Brian, what is the order of best-selling to least selling of those 4?
Say number 1 is tequila.
Okay.
Number 2 is bourbon. Number 3, Irish whiskey. Number 4, gin.
Okay. Funch, put him in order.
Same order that Brian had. Tequila.
Okay, you're going tequila, bourbon, Irish whiskey.
And gin.
And gin.
Actually, you know what? You know what? Gin before Irish whiskey.
Okay. Lindsay, I can tell you.
Don't give me any hints of anything.
Okay. Go.
I'm going to go bourbon. No. I'm going to go whiskey, bourbon, tequila, gin.
Okay. None of you got it in the exact right order. Funch and Brian were close. Number one, tequila. It's up.
Yay!
It's up 64% in the month of April. Number two, and none of you got this, Irish whiskey is up 60%. Number three.
Well, I did put that as number one, so I got.
Yeah, you were the closest. Number three, Funch, good last minute save by you. Gin, up 49%. And none of you had bourbon last, but it was last. It was up 47%. By the way, two I didn't give you because I didn't want to make it too complicated. Vodka and rum. What do you think was better selling, rum or vodka, Brian?
I would imagine rum had a higher bump than vodka because vodka probably sold at higher levels anyway, which is why bourbon was probably fourth on that list, which is why Funches and I were actually correct.
All right, Funch, what sold better in April, rum or vodka?
Vodka. Definitely vodka.
Lindsay, break the tie.
I think vodka.
Brian, you're the winner. 33% increase for rum.
Right.
30% increase for vodka.
Right, you're using
a
deceptive. It's a very deceptive metric that you're using, John. And I saw through it. And so, gin is disgusting. Is the takeaway here? Nobody should be drinking it.
I agree. And as somebody who used to be a bartender, I'm surprised at that. But I guess you know people's drinking habits have changed because the number one ordered thing was whiskey by far, with vodka being second.
Lindsay, I, like you, was a former bartender, and the one thing that I will say, the reason you guys are underestimating gin is that the martini has made a huge comeback. Now, a lot of people drink vodka martinis, but if you make an old-fashioned martini, like if somebody just walks in and says, give me a martini, you would make it with gin, which may be why this thing's way up. All right, more Fast Track coming up next. Brian Informace, ESPN LA, 710. All right, rolling on with 5 o'clock Fast Track. And Brian, it's to you.
Fast Track.
We're back to me. All right, let's do this one. There are no such thing as a shameless plug in the current environment we're in, so they're just only plugs. I wrote something this week for The Athletic in the spirit of The Last Dance and the news that all the Kobe footage from his last season is out there and might be cut together into a documentary. Remember, a film crew, John, followed him around.
Well, I was part of that. They followed us everywhere we went. And we had Lindsay got Deepak Chopra on the show within the last couple of weeks. And Deepak, who produced Muse, said it's really up to to Kobe's estate, Vanessa and the family. By the way, again, I mentioned it at the top of the show, but happy birthday, Gigi. Today would have been Gianna's 14th birthday. So we're thinking about her and the family today. But it's just a matter of, Brian, if they release it, but it's there. There's just hours and hours of footage out there.
Right. So I got me to thinking, like, you know, just from the time that I've been around the team, covering the team in one form or another, which goes to back to about the 2005-2006 season. What Lakers seasons, what Lakers players, what Lakers storylines would I like to see made into a documentary? So I had a few suggestions here. I suggested the 2010-2011 season. That was the one where they were going for the three-peat and ended up getting swept by Dallas. And it was a really up and down season where, remember, John, where we all talked about they're going to flip the switch. That's what it just never quite happened. And the end of this era, I thought, was really fascinating. So that was one. The first season following Kobe's retirement was incredibly eventful. Remember, that was the one where Jeannie eventually fired Jim and Mitch and brought in Magic Johnson and then brought in Rob Pelinka. So there was a lot going on there. I would be very interested just in something about the Buss family, about Smush Parker. That was a crazy story. We don't think about it now. Smush Parker was a crazy story. That guy was the starting point guard for the Lakers for 2 years. And for like 20 minutes was like a cult hero and the biggest feel-good story in basketball, and then started picking fights with Kobe, which turned out to be a bad idea. There are a bunch of other ones on there, but I would ask you guys, if you could pick a couple Lakers seasons or stories or whatever that could be made into documentaries, where would you start?
All right, there's only one place to start, and it would only have to be one year. It's the year Peyton and Malone came, 2003-2004. It was like traveling with a rock band. Remember, Peyton and Malone agreed to take minimum salaries because that was the only way the Lakers could get them in under the cap, but they could give them perks. So whenever we went into a new hotel, the top floor of the hotel where all the suites were just loaded with Shaq, Kobe, Phil, Malone, and Peyton. And, you know, it was like we had these five megastars everywhere we went. And there were all these weird twists in the season that you just never knew where it was going and how they were going to fit all those egos and could they get this crazy lab experiment to work. So that's where I would go. Funch, how about you?
I think I'm going to go the 2012-2013 season, the one that, you know, we all thought they were going to go to the finals with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, Meta.
Dwight, yeah, that's a good
one.
What
happened, you know? And I know we had injuries and stuff like that, but I know there's some stuff in the locker room that we all don't know about. So we'd love to see a documentary on that.
That's
and
a good one.
Lindsay, did you follow the Lakers when you were living in Ohio closely?
Nope, but I would love to see what happened with LeBron deciding to come here and play there, because that was like a whole big thing. Like, that was a rumor for a good, what, year and a half? And just, you know, starting with game one of the 2017 finals, starting with that game, because I still think
is that
think
the game where J.R. Smith forgot the score?
Yes. Yeah. And I'll never forget that game, because I feel like the outcome in the last 2 minutes of that game changed NBA history, and like the whole, it could have gone in a whole other direction had that game gone differently. I'll never not be convinced of that. So that's what I'd like to see.
Huh. Those are all good ones. What did you settle on, Brian, in the article? Did you pick one or did you just
lay out choices? I had a whole list of them. And obviously, you know, it would be a fascinating one. It's not over yet this season. Like, it is like, go back to Magic Johnson resigned barely over a calendar year ago. Think about everything that this team has gone through over the course of basically a calendar year. I don't think it's possible for a team to have more. You know, you acquire AD, you have, you know, this incredible run at the beginning of the season, you have a new coach in Vogel, the entire mess of last summer. Think about how awful things were around here last summer. It wasn't that long ago. And now the team is in great shape. And then you have, you know, Kobe's tragedy and, you know, and the atmosphere after that and the memorial and then the playoffs and now a pandemic which shuts down the league. Like, I'd watch that.
It's been bizarre, it's an amazing
calendar year. I have no idea.
Yeah, crazy. Funch.
Fast track.
All right, let's finish with the game. Earlier in the week on Monday, Mason asked all of us to name our favorite three Al Pacino movies because Al Pacino turned 80 last weekend. So I have a game. These are five facts about Al Pacino. You guys simply tell me true or false. Lindsay, you can play. Funch, you can play. And Brian, you can play. Five facts, Al Pacino, true or false. Fact number one, Pacino turned down at least two roles that ended up winning an Oscar for somebody else. He passed on the role of Popeye in The French Connection that went to Gene Hackman, and also passed on the role of Elliot in The Goodbye Girl that went to Richard Dreyfuss. Lindsay, is that true or false?
I'm going to guess true.
Okay, Funch.
True.
Brian.
I think it's true that he passed on roles, but I don't think those were the roles. I will say false.
Brian, you hit the nail exactly on the head. He passed on both those roles where Gene Hackman and Dreyfuss always had those roles.
He did pass.
He did pass.
That's not fair.
Of course it's fair.
Yes, it is. You play the player. You don't always have to play the game.
Yeah, but like, because I don't know what either one of those movies are, and I would have no idea. But
well, how is that my fault,
Lindsay? I'll tell you what, Lindsay. I will give you a point if you can come up with this based on this one clue. He passed on a role that you have seen many, many times and that you love. Take a shot.
And Funch, Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka, no. Funch, you want to take a shot?
Jeez. Now, I'm going to take a shot.
Okay. Lindsay, he passed on Han Solo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good thing he did. He would have been terrible as Han Solo.
And by the way, he would have had to wear, like, stilts. Al Pacino's, like, 5'7". All right, so Brian's got a 1-0 lead.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Okay. In The Godfather, Pacino played Michael Corleone, whose father Vito immigrated to the United States from the small Sicilian town of Corleone. Ironically, Pacino's grandparents were also originally from Corleone, Sicily. Is that true or false, Funch?
False.
False. Brian?
False.
False. Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm going to just go the opposite and say true.
Good you did. His maternal grandparents, James and Kate Girardi, both came from Corleone, Sicily. One for Lindsay, one for Brian. Funch not on the board yet. We got three left. Brian, you go first this time. Pacino applied for but was rejected by the New York Actors Studio when he was a teenager. In 1994, he became the president of the Actors Studio. Brian, in the name of James Lipton, true or false?
I will say that's true. It's got a very MJ didn't make varsity as a sophomore kind of feel.
It sure does. Lindsay.
I'm going to guess that it's true as well.
Okay, Funch.
I'll say it's false.
Funch, you're still scoreless. It is 100% true, along with Ellen Burstyn and Harvey Keitel. He was named president of the Actors Studio in 1994. When he was 17, he tried to get in, and they told him no. All right, two more. It's well known that Pacino has only won one Oscar for Scent of a Woman, although he's been nominated 8 times. He also won 4 Emmy Awards, one each for playing Roy Cohn, Jack Kevorkian, Joe Paterno, and Phil Spector. Lindsay, true or false?
I'm going to guess true.
All right, Funch.
False.
False. Brian.
I can't remember if he won for all of those. I will say false.
Good you did, Brian. You were absolutely right. He did not win for all of those. He won once for playing Roy Cohn.
Roy Cohn, yeah.
And then the other for playing Jack Kevorkian. So he did not have 4. He had 2. All right, it's close. Brian, 3. Lindsay, 2. Funchess, 1. Here it is for all the marbles. Pacino dropped out of high school at 17 to support himself. He took odd jobs as a messenger, a janitor, a busboy, and a postal clerk. Brian, this one's worth 2.5. True or false?
I'll say true.
Lindsay?
I'm also going to guess true because I'm pretty sure that that is true.
All right, Fudge.
False.
I don't want to go against him. I normally would, but I feel like it's true.
It would be very John to be like, but he wasn't a postal clerk. He was a baker's assistant.
That, it would we'll be very much. And Fudge, I admire you for going for it, but you come up short. Brian's your winner. Those are all true. He did all of those things. I found it interesting, though. Dropped out of high school at 17. Doesn't even have a high school diploma. And he's had this incredible career. So Brian is the winner. All right, when we come back, Sliwa at Sunset. Alan Sliwa will join us on the program, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason in Ireland is winding down. And next up, it's Sliwa at Sunset. Alan Sliwa is standing by. Last night's show was a little different. It was Sliwa in the can. He put 3 interviews in the can. Oh, and the Kamenetsky children have arrived.
Brian, yeah, I had to go inside for a second. That is Grace.
Hi, Grace.
She is currently trying to climb up on the coffee table.
Yeah, probably a good idea for you to get involved there.
Yeah, it's a low table.
All right. So, you know, we've got one of the ways you can listen to the show is, we forgot to play voicemails today, Lindsay. I forgot we had that one about Ramona. We'll play them on Monday. But one of the ways you can participate in the show is hashtag Ask Mason in Ireland. So let me throw one of these at you. This is from Kevin. Was Jordan or Kobe more harder and demanding on teammates? Brian, what do you think?
I think Jordan sort of invented it, so I guess he gets credit.
Alan, I was going to say that Jordan once punched Steve Kerr in the face, but I remember Kobe and Samaki Walker got into it once. So I think it's almost a dead even tie. Kobe was hard on his teammates. Kobe was the bad cop to Derek Fisher's good cop. But the stories of Jordan being tough on teammates are pretty legendary. Yeah, that's a tough one to answer.
That's a great question. I never really thought about that. There's certain players we've been seeing in the documentary. It's not because of the documentary we say, man, there's so many similarities to Kobe and Jordan. We already knew that. But that's a really perfect way to put it. Like both of these guys, how they were with their teammates. Maybe I think I'm with you, BK, because Jordan was not the first to do it. But between the two, obviously, I'd go Jordan. Maybe a little bit of the edge to Jordan on that one.
All right, here's another one. 98 Bulls versus the 01 Lakers. Let's say that the 2001 Lakers get Phil. The 98 Bulls get Doug Collins. Who gets Ron Harper? I guess since we got Phil, we got to give them Harper. Who wins, Alan? 98 Bulls against the 01 Lakers.
I'll take Lakers with Phil. Give me Lakers and Phil.
Right.
The only problem with that we've heard that question come up before on because Shaq brought it up. Remember when Shaq said, oh,
right,
take,
on his,
you know,
on his podcast, yeah.
The only issue with that is Kobe was so young. You know, that if we got Kobe in his prime to match what the Bulls had in their prime, that's the only thing that makes that question tougher. But we get Phil, I think that's an advantage right there.
Brian?
I think the question there is obviously from the Chicago side is who guards Shaq? That's
right.
The, you know, what kind of defense do they come up with to guard Shaq? But the flip side is the Bulls have Pippen to put on Kobe. And if Kobe has to guard Jordan, like, how do you do that? So like, there's a matchup issue with each of the teams that is really, really significant. But I mean, Shaq was so dominant at that point. I give a slight edge just because of the positional freakishness of Shaq, but that is a good series.
I think the tougher one, Alan, would be the 96 Bulls, the 72 win team against the 01 Lakers that went 15-1 in the playoffs. That would be a tough series.
Did you guys hear Shaq when he was that audio clip where he pronounced Bill Wennington's name? He's like, it just shows he's like, there's no way going to stop me. Bill Wennington. Like, he doesn't even, it completely butchers his last name. I don't think he knew who the center was at that time, but, that 96
okay.
team.
Interesting sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Wennington is the Michael Thompson of the Chicago Bulls. He's the radio color commentator for the Chicago Bulls. So we see Bill every year, who's a great guy. All right, this one from Danny. When do you guys think sports will be back with fans? In my opinion, I don't know if I want to go back to live games if the experience is diminished. I think we are going to have games without fans. But, Brian, that's a great question. Realistically, when are we going to start seeing, you know, based on Danny's question, you're assuming that you could invite 20,000 people to go to one building like we were used to. Will we ever see that again? Yeah, at some point,
yes,
right?
Yes, I mean, at some point we will. I think it depends on which team. Like, I feel like the Tampa Bay Rays could go back to normal tomorrow. With all appropriate social distance.
Social distance everywhere.
Right. They've been doing that for decades at this point. College football, where you're putting, you know, 70,000 people in one place, that could be why. I don't think there'll be live fans in buildings of any significance until 2021.
By the way, I've now changed my opinion. I think Grace should be allowed to climb on the table because she's obviously in great pain. You know, you should allow
this is why
Grace
I do most
climb
of
on
the show
table.
From a. This is why I do most of the show from a van.
BK, just let Grace live her life, man. Just let her live her life.
She loves the pandemic. Nobody likes the pandemic more than Grace because she doesn't have to get in the car, which she doesn't like. Her brothers are always home. We're always here. It's great. She loves it.
Do you know, BK, there's a promo running where Mason and Ireland are telling your son to say you can't trust, but don't be a Sliwa.
Don't be a Sliwa. Yeah.
Don't be a Sliwa.
Well, that's good advice. That's good advice in general.
Listen, I'm not arguing at all.
I mean, Alan, think about it. You're a man stuck in Koreatown with no pets and no friends and no female companionship, and you cheat at radio games. Why would anyone want to be a Sliwa?
Let me tell you, John, BK.
That was
BK,
really cold the way you put that.
BK, BK
really distilled that down to its essence in a way that I don't think was very BK, good for Ireland.
BK, leave it to Mason in Ireland to just paint a picture of you and just run with it for as long as they want to go.
I used to be very nice to Alan Bryan until he started tilting the games towards Mason just so he could win. And that's where Alan lost me.
I'm just saying, I don't think I've ever heard anyone be quite cut down in that way so thoroughly over such a short period of time. Like,
have you not heard the Sliwa portion of our show on a daily basis?
Oh, I hear it all the time. But I'm just saying, like, even in that context, BK, what you just did there was a deconstruction.
BK,
that was
what did I do to them, man?
Very
what
difficult.
What did I do to them, BK? What
I don't happened? Know, but I don't know how Alan is going to function between 6:30 and
all right,
9
so,
o'clock.
So, hey,
tonight.
Here's an interesting tweet from Arash Markazi, who's our buddy who writes for the LA Times. I'm talking about this Sunday's episode of The Last Dance. So this Sunday, 6 o'clock, will be episode 5. 7 o'clock will be episode 6. Episode 5, this is according to Arash, he just tweeted it. Episode 5 is dedicated to Kobe Bryant. His interview was filmed at his office in Costa Mesa last July, and they edited it a week before he passed. They went back and looked at it, but it was perfect. Nothing needed to be changed. The only edit is a dedication at the top. So if, you know, obviously most people we know are watching The Last Dance, but it sounds like if you're a Laker fan, this is the episode Sunday at 6 you don't want to miss.
That's going to be a tough one. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one for a lot of, you know, obviously not just Laker fans, but just in general, right? It's like this all happened so quick, and it's such a awful setting, and I think today, is it today, it's Gigi's 14th birthday?
Yeah, yes.
It would have been 14th birthday. I mean, just, it's sad, but you're right, John. I mean, every Laker fan out there, a lot of people in LA will definitely, they're watching The Last Dance, but, you know, this episode will have, obviously, it will mean more.
Okay, so another thing, if you're a Laker fan, tomorrow on Spectrum Sportsnet, they put together a mini-series called Birth of a Dynasty. It's basically the story of the Shaq-Kobe Lakers. It's 4 chapters. They're going to air the series in its entirety starting tomorrow at 10 a.m. So if you've never seen it, if you've never seen Birth of a Dynasty, and let's face it, we're all dying for sports content, tomorrow, 10 a.m. on Spectrum Sportsnet, if you want to record it, go for it. It's going to be on in its entirety tomorrow at 10 a.m. starting, all 4 of them.
And, of course, we know Alan will have time for it on account of being childless and girlfriendless.
Yes.
In
and petless. He doesn't even have a dog.
He doesn't even have a pet. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of stray animals that wander around that neighborhood, and Alan can't get even one of them to come up and live with him.
Brian, if you want the full sad truth, not only all of that, but somebody stole Alan's underwear.
I heard that story.
They stole his laundry.
By the way, John, on what day was it? You guys brought this up again. I got to try and find the tweet. I got a tweet from this like laundry company that was like, "Hey, we'll make sure your laundry doesn't get stolen." Something along those lines. I gotta find which one it is, but I'll find it. I'll find it and let you know.
I have long contended that's the most flattering thing anybody's ever done, where somebody wanted the Sliwa experience so badly that they're willing to steal your laundry and wear your underwear. That's how badly they want inside the Alan Sliwa experience. It's creepy and weird, and I wouldn't want to know that person, but it's still flattering.
Okay, N-A-K-I Laundry, Naki Laundry. At Alan Sliwa, next time you don't need to worry if someone is going to steal your laundry from the laundry room. We offer same-day pickup and delivery. That's the tweet that they sent me. What they didn't know is that they stole it from my car, but that's very appreciative there.
So here, there's an interesting article that just came out in the New York Times. It's written by Kevin Draper, and he got a hold of the MGM Resorts International proposal to the NBA to try and get them to come out and start the league and finish the season. in Las Vegas. Now, Alan, Ramona was on with us earlier at 4 o'clock. She's been working this story, and she no longer believes in the bubble concept. She thinks that they're going to have to come up with something else. She thinks that the bubble concept is for whatever reason, not gaining any traction, and they're going to have to maybe come up with something else. But according to a proposal deck sent to the NBA and the WNBA, the MGM offered a fully quarantined campus, one full block of the Las Vegas Strip, where players would live and play out whatever the schedule leagues want. The athletes would be joined by their families, league and broadcast media employees, as well as staff and vendors needed to serve them, with access to lounges, spas, restaurants, and all other resort perks. Yes, even gambling. So, obviously, this is a proposal from the Las Vegas side of things. But that's something that's on the NBA table. Alan, what's your level of optimism right now that we're going to see a resumption of the current NBA season?
They're pushing so hard to find a solution. I feel like, look, if it's 60 days from now, if it's more than that, whatever the case is, I think they're just pushing so hard to crown a champ that you figure they might give it some type of shot. Now, we obviously don't know the details. I mean, just looking at today and the conversation about delaying the 2020-2021 season until December, either way, you know, like whether they finish the season or they don't, I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yep, we talked about it.
That kind of, I mean, tells me that they got a vision. They want to obviously try as best as they can to save the revenue that they've already lost. The bubble idea, there are so many. Brian Windhorst was on The Jump today, and he was talking about it, and he's got a good article in on ESPN.com as well, where there's so many factors, John. Like to make it work, I mean, I think for us sometimes we just sit here. I know for me, and it's like, oh, well, yeah, just once they get the green light, it's all good to go. Nothing's going to be the same anymore. So maybe NASCAR can do some things. Obviously, UFC is going to start May 9th. Golf, they'll have some opportunities because it's golf. I think they're going to try to do everything they can to make it happen. Like, that part is, you know, obvious that they're going to every measure. It's just going to be an incredible challenge. I think every day it seems like it's going to be more of a challenge.
Brian, here's more details from this New York Times article. The centerpiece of the proposal is the Mandalay Bay Resort, which has 4,700 rooms at three connected hotels at the southern end of the Strip, the Mandalay Bay, the Four Seasons, and the Delano. They're also connected to the by walkway to the Luxor, which is where MGM service staff, such as housekeepers and caterers, would live. As many as 24 courts could be built at the convention center at Mandalay Bay. Five would be used to telecast games, while the others would be for practice. MGM also proposed getting access to the Thomas and Mack Center that hosts the annual Summer League. Does any of this, Brian, seem viable to you?
Well, I mean, it certainly convinced me to go quarantine in Vegas, but I actually think, in terms of practicality, if you're going to do this sort of bubble kind of concept, it makes more sense to do it in Florida than it does in Vegas, just because you have, I mean, I realize, you know, they open up the spas, you have a much easier time keeping the public out of places at Disney World because it's a giant piece of private property. There's more ability for the athletes and their families, presumably, to move around and not feel like they're seeing. I realize these are big hotels and whatever, but you're still feeling like you're isolated in one spot. If you can go from this part of Disney World to another part of Disney World and you're on the bus and you like people who haven't been there, it is a massive, massive property that you literally have to shuttle around to get from place to place. I feel like the sense of isolation would be far less there. It's a much easier place to bring your kids. Of the two places, I think that's the more viable option.
Well, Ramona said when she was on earlier that one reason she's going south on the bubble concept is that these guys, these players, don't want to be apart from their families. So any one of these proposals has got to be welcoming to families. And it sounds like they both are. Which makes sense. I mean, you don't want to be away from your family for that long. But
depends on your
John,
family.
John, how do you feel? Do you feel more optimistic, or do you think this is just going to be there's so many challenges here?
I've been optimistic the whole time because I think that you're going to see sports coming back like this. Korean Baseball League starting up next week. Brian, you mentioned, I think it was you, Alan, mentioned NASCAR. Golf's coming back. What this looks like a month from now will be different from what it looks like now. So I'm optimistic that something can get done. But after listening to Ramona, I'm less optimistic about the bubble. I'm not sure the bubble is the way it gets done. It may look more like what the Bob Nightingale baseball proposal was, where you play in your own stadium with no fans. I'm starting to think that's the more likely scenario. I'm not pessimistic. I'm not Bill Plachke, Alan, who was on your show last night and thinks the world is ending.
Bill's always been a glass half empty kind of guy. Wonderful dude. But I mean, if there's, you know, he's not going to come in and just cheer up the room. That's not Bill's thing.
Alan put him on. And then you had that Jabari Young on last night, too, right?
Yeah, that was a little too much for me.
Were you just trying to kill the general enthusiasm in the city? Was it like the downer the Sliwa goes down, Sliwa in the can special?
You know what it is, John, actually more than anything is I've spent a lot of time, you know, playing out every scenario and talking about and really being optimistic as well, thinking like, look, the NBA, obviously Adam Silver, the players, you saw LeBron's tweet yesterday. They want to make this thing work, but when there's other angles to it, I am curious. Like the Jabari Young part, he had some decent points in there. The one thing that I just completely disagree with is let's just shut the season down right now. I don't understand who it hurts if you wait 30 more days or if you wait 60 more days. Like, why do you have to make a decision right now? Can't you just kind of kick the can down the road and see what happens? His angle was it's not safe. So if it's not safe, why would you do it? The point I was trying to make was, well, it's not safe today. They're not saying they're going to start it today. Obviously, a different angle. Everybody has their opinions on it.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Alan Tsuga is hanging out with us. Brian Informace, ESPN LA, 710. All right, Mason and I are on show winding down. We're getting ready to hand it off to Sliwa at Sunset. Alan, what do you got coming up on the big Sliwa extravaganza tonight?
Hit on a lot of this NBA stuff. I'm actually, you know, the part of delaying the 2020-21, how many 20s did I just throw in there, season until
next
December.
Next season, not this season, next season.
Right, for next season. But doing it either way, right? Like, that's the idea. The conversation is about that, either way to do it. I think that part's interesting. And then John Orend from the Sports Business Journal on some ideas the NFL has to shake up the schedule, if they need to, about delaying the season.
Brian and I were talking about it earlier. I'm not against starting next season in December. It may happen out of necessity, but I think a lot of things are going to be born out of the coronavirus that they're going to try just because they have to. And let's see. I mean, not going head to head with the NFL and moving the season deep into the summer. Who knows? Until we try it, we won't know what it is. I wouldn't be against that. Would you?
You know, John, I think what it is, I'll kind of use this as an example. If a big NBA fan like you and I and BK, we'll watch anytime, right? Like, it literally doesn't matter. They could start the season any time of the year and we're all in it. But I think for maybe that more casual fan, that Christmas or that December time frame of starting the season for the NBA, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Like you said, it's going to be less competition. And again, that's probably more for a casual fan that doesn't watch the NBA like we do.
Brian, I'm sitting here. Okay, so I've talked about this on the show before. I have East Coast feeds at my house because I have DirecTV. Mm-hmm. They're getting rid of them. I'm not going to be able to hang on to them for much longer, but I've had them for like 20 years, and it's great. So tonight on ABC, they're running a special on Phil Hartman, the late SNL comedian.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
Yeah, so it's going to be on later. And so I've had it on in the background with the sound down, so I can't hear what's going on. But one of the things that they're showing is that Phil Hartman was once a winning contestant on the dating game. Remember the old dating game show where you'd have three guys? And they're showing other clips of people who ended up being famous who were once contestants on the dating game. I never knew this. Do you guys know that Steve Martin, George Foreman, the boxer, Gregory Hines, and Phil Hartman were all contestants of the dating game? How did I not know that?
I didn't know that either.
That is spectacular news. I love things like that.
You know that there's also a famous serial killer that was on the dating game and won.
That's not good.
Yeah. He won. So they sent a woman out on a date with a serial killer.
Yes, they did. Well, actually, so he won, and then after the backstage interaction, like after the fact, like he was like super smooth and convincing and had all the like the right words to say on the show. But then as soon as they got backstage and they started talking, I guess the woman said like she got a really bad, creepy vibe from him. And she used the word creepy. And she said she didn't feel comfortable. So they like lied and made something up because they were worried that this woman felt that creeped out and unsafe. And he ended up being a serial killer.
Wow. I'm glad they made that choice.
Me too.
It wasn't exactly the dating game, but I was in a bachelor auction when I lived in San Diego for Children's Hospital. So a bunch of guys who were single at the time agreed to do it. And so
how much did you go for?
I can't remember. It wasn't a ton of money. Maybe like $2,500, something like that.
Well, that's a lot.
Good work, John. Good work.
Well, no, but it was, you know, I there were guys that went for way more than me. Let's put it that way. But the only reason I agreed to do it is because my friend Greg Champion, who I will now call out personally, agreed to do it with me. And I go, okay, so we're selling this as a package deal, right? Whatever our date is. And the people from Children's Hospital were great. They're like, okay, what do you want to do? And we put together like a package weekend in Vegas. We were going to a show and it was, and we had a bunch of fun stuff set up. And so we each get bought by women in the audience, and the money all goes to Children's Hospital. And the trip is 2 weeks later. So like 3 days before the trip, I call Champion, my buddy, and I go, okay, you all set? He goes, oh, we already broke up. I go, what do you mean you already broke up? I go, you weren't even supposed to go out with her again until we left for the trip. He goes, yeah, we had lunch. We didn't have, so he sent me by myself.
What do you think Sliwa goes for at auction?
Well, it depends. It depends, Alan, what the charity is. If the charity, if we could put you in a bachelor auction for a good charity, a real like that one, like Children's Hospital of L.A., Mason and I would make sure that you did not get left, standing up there going for low money. We would take it upon ourselves personally to get you a very large sum, guaranteeing that anyone that bought the Alan Sliwa at Sunset Experience would be handsomely rewarded. You'll probably get asked to do it at some point. It just depends on what the charity is. If it's some two-bit charity that you've never heard of, don't do it. But if there's something for like Children's Hospital, do it, because that's a really good one.
Is Children's Hospital the one that Pow used to always
Pow would do St. Jude's, which is St. Jude's.
Alan, you are correct. He did some stuff when he was with the Lakers. He did a big thing where he went and learned about like surgery and all that kind of, and that was at Children's. You're right. Mm.
Yeah. And he was like the greatest celebrity I've ever seen. He was more normal. I've said this before, Brian, you covered him too, was the most normal famous person I've ever met. Completely unaffected. Pau Gasol was completely and still is unaffected by fame. He might be the most famous athlete in Spain. It's either him or Rafa Nadal, who he's friends with. Maybe some of the soccer players. But it's just, if he walked up to you on the street, he would have a 10-minute conversation with you. Just the greatest guy. So whatever Pau's involved in, I'm in. And he did a ton of stuff for St. Jude's. And, yeah, Brian, I do remember that he did stuff for Children's Hospital of L.A., too. So good for him. All right, Alan, the weekend is upon us. I'm handing it off to you. Are you ready? Are you set for a big weekend?
Have you guys seen L.A. Originals on Netflix?
No, what is it?
L.A. Originals is kind of a breakdown of Estevan Oriol, who'll come on the show a little bit later, and the cartoon, if you guys know who that is. So like a famous photographer and a famous tattoo artist that kind of set this whole culture for L.A. I thought you guys maybe have seen it. You guys would both appreciate it if you see it. It's on Netflix, L.A. Originals.
And he's coming on tonight?
He's coming on tonight as well.
All right, cool. All right, that's next. Alan, so Brian, thank you for doing this.
Anytime.
All right, have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Alan's next, ESPN LA, 710.